GPs in England and the UK are the most stressed around. That's some of the headlines that we saw recently. And in this episode, we're going to cover the report that explains all that stuff that you may have read about, whether it's true or not, and what impact that may have on you. And are we actually more stressed than the rest of the world? Shall we see if we can find out? Let's take an anti-primary care and learning. Hello, EGP learners. Welcome to this episode where we're looking at the Health Foundation report that has come out recently. It talks about GP stress and burnout. It's rather apt. It's coming out at this point when we're talking about strikes and various other things that's happening across the whole NHS. And it's got some really interesting data that we're going to share with you in this episode and talk around. It does come based off the recent Commonwealth report that came out. And we've got some really unique kind of information to share with you in this particular episode, don't we, Andy?
Yeah, it should be another interesting episode. So I guess, like many people, a few weeks ago, this report is from 22nd of March, not too long ago, but you know, there's been other things happening like the Hewitt report and contract changes that we've been focused on in the last few weeks. So this came out towards the end of March. People might have seen headlines along the lines of this sort of thing. UK GPs are among the most stressed and least satisfied international study finds. So we thought we'd have a little dig behind that and see where these headlines came from. And there's a report from the Health Foundation, which is a UK research body that looks at healthcare within the UK. And they participated or collaborated with the Commonwealth Fund, which is an international group that do research around healthcare delivery internationally. They often provide those league tables between different health services. You might remember UK was near the top for a few years and then significantly dropped down over the last few years. So they participated in the UK based part of that research. But the Commonwealth report that the Health Foundation's report is based on looks at, I think, across 10 high income countries, including the UK, US, other European counterparts, compares how GPs feel about their jobs, their level of stress, and their ability to deliver good care within the systems that they operate. So it's a really interesting report, actually. One of the things that struck me, Gandhi, before we dig in, is that it seems like it's tough for general practice everywhere. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes we might think, oh, this is a UK phenomenon, and you know, people in Germany, you know, other places that have different ways of delivering healthcare and primary care, you know, they must be doing a lot better than us. But actually, there are stresses everywhere around the world that perhaps
we're going to see some rather shocking numbers as well as we go through this, and you know, I think going to surprise a lot of people when we cover this particular document and stuff.
Yeah, but I guess funding. I was going to say, I guess funding and you know, demographic crunch and things, you know, they're happening, you know, globally in rich countries, aren't they? So let's bring up the report and let's go through really and see where some of these headlines came from. So so far away, Gandhi. I guess we should talk about you know, how the report was conducted really, and some of the limitations. So do you want to talk us?
Yeah, so I mean, it mentions in the introduction how the report, it was a review of various different countries. There are about 9,526 responses. Interestingly, a good chunk of those are from the UK, so over 1,000 responses were from UK GPs, and there was representation from all the different the devolved nations and stuff that came through on that. Although it was only about 22% of people asked to respond actually did respond, that was universally similar in terms of the different countries and stuff. So the sampling rates are varying and that kind of stuff and things. But it does make comparisons between the data from 2019, so just around about the time of the COVID pandemic, and just before it, in fact, and obviously currently. And that's a lot of the data that we're going to be having a look at. It does mention some of the limitations in terms of the data. So I think we're going to have a little look at that, aren't we, in terms of...
Yeah. So this is where they were talking about the approach that they took and the numbers involved and the number of responses. 22.4% response rate in the UK. And I guess they're comparing 10 nations and, you know, about 1,000 of the responses from the UK. So that's, you know, pretty reasonable, you know, expected representation, I think. Yeah, limitations. Talk us through that, Gandhi.
So, I mean, clearly there's going to be some limitation when you compare healthcare systems and stuff. So one of the ones is that the role of the GP is completely different in many of these different countries. So if you obviously compare us to America, the way that GPs work is completely different, family physicians versus GPs and stuff. But even across the European countries, obviously the way that it works. So some countries, you know, GPs don't see any form of paediatric care, for example, whereas obviously in the UK we do. They may not do any obstetric care, whereas we do some elements of that, obviously in primary care. And also, you know, some places they still have direct access to specialists, whereas obviously in the UK it's very much a gatekeeper role. Interesting that they do make reference that the trend does seem to be moving towards the gatekeeper role of general practice becoming a larger proportion of those healthcare regions where it's not been a factor. So it looks like more regions are moving towards that model, with America being the only outlier in that section and stuff from what I could read. There is that key one. That's one of the key limitations and stuff.
Yeah, and they're just highlighting this was done at a single point in time. So I think we picked up that this is done in 2002. They make reference to data from 2022. They also make reference to data in 2019. So they're making some comparisons, and they do that sensitively when they do it with pre-pandemic data as well. But I guess this is not 2023 data, and I mean, things have happened to the cost of living, and you know, things have developed since then. I guess we just wanted to acknowledge in terms of how GPs might be feeling about their jobs in all of these countries.
Yeah, and that will be relevant to one of the sections. It talks about another limitation in the fact that a lot of the information is self-reported, so it's not they've not looked at universal data sets or that kind of stuff because they're not really comparable. So it talks about, for example, remote consultations, how that's self-reported by the clinicians themselves and their perception of what they're doing. And then last one, in terms of the actual sampling rate, so it does mention obviously it's 22% sampling responses and stuff on average. But you know, that's just one of the limitations of the fact that it's a sample rather than obviously a you know, full data set and things.
Yeah, but it's nonetheless an interesting study, and it's really interesting to see how the UK compares to other countries around the world. So I guess let's dig in then. But first, they do reflect on some data about the number of GPs per 1,000 head of population across these different countries using data from 2019. So I think that's interesting to reflect on. The UK had 0.76 GPs. I'm hoping that they're using full-time equivalent GPs. One hopes that that's the methodology they used. They're not quite clear. But 0.76 per 1,000, lower than most countries, apart from Sweden, which is 0.62. The US, which is 0.31, and I think as we've acknowledged, the role of the primary care physician is quite different in the US compared to UK's general practice model. At the other end of the spectrum, Germany has bang on one per 1,000, and the Netherlands has 1.74, which is quite high.
Amazing.
Yeah, really good. Yeah. So, yeah, shall we just roll through and reflect on these graphs, Gandhi, because there's obviously the ones about burnout, but it's just interesting to see the other graphs as well. So this first one is overall, how satisfied are you with practicing medicine? The overall job satisfaction, I guess. And it's compared 2019 pre-pandemic with 2022 now-ish. The UK's GPs are amongst the least satisfied, with GPs in France being slightly less satisfied on average, although in 2022, actually in France, they are a little bit more satisfied. How do you reflect on this, Gandhi?
So I think the big thing is the shift that we've seen. So we've gone from being 39% down to 24%, which is now the lowest out of all 10 of the countries and stuff. So, you know, clearly our fellow GPs are not satisfied with the way general practice is currently functioning and stuff. And, you know, that reflects, I think, on a lot of the temperature that we see from many of our clinicians and colleagues and that kind of stuff. Doesn't surprise me. Interesting that we are lower than every other country in terms of, you know, that reported scale and stuff. So, and that has, you know, I think some impact and some understanding of what that means. And this will feed into some of the later graphs that we're going to talk about as well. So I think it's important to be aware of that significant shift that we can see there.
Absolutely. Interesting that it's shifted downwards over that time period for all GPs across the world. As well.
But also, as you mentioned, every country apart from Sweden has also seen a negative shift as well. This is not a universal, this is not an independent, unique thing to the UK. It is universally seeming to be the case with general practice.
and globally, apart from Switzerland, less than 50% of people are GPs are satisfied with practicing medicine as well, which I think is interesting. Would be interesting to see how other professions compare, how other roles within within medicine compare, you know, specialist consultants, for example. But there we go. How satisfied are you with the following aspects of your medical practice? So this is really interesting, and this is just the data from the UK presented, so we're not getting an international comparison here. And it's sort of structured from so red is actually good on this graph, and blue is bad, not satisfied.
It's just slightly weird. Yeah, I must admit.
And these are the aspects ordered in the order in which people are most happy with them, really. And so people are more satisfied with their income, then work-life balance, then becoming less satisfied with time spent with patients and workload and time spent on administrative work. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the key thing with this, as we mentioned earlier, is the timing is relevant. So this data set is taken from before the cost of living increases started to impact a lot of the stuff that we're now seeing. So that will have, I guess, some impact on the perspective of income side of things. Although, you know, we do recognise that compared to other parts of the population, general practitioners are generally well paid compared to, you know, other parts of, you know, society and that kind of stuff. But one thing that's not surprising, I think, is the fact that workload and administrative burden are definitely the things that are turning people away from liking the kind of work that they do. And that's understandable. And it has a huge impact at all in terms of that. You can see, you know, administrative workload, you know, taking up a good, you know, over 50% in terms of not at all satisfied. So, you know, that's an area where there needs to be, I think, a focus of trying to improve how general practice functions.
Yeah, I think the income one is really interesting as well. And I think actually, you know, people hear us on this podcast and other GPs talking about we want more money for general practice, more funding for general practice. And that does not mean that we want GPs to be paid more. That is an aspect that probably does need to be looked at in view of inflation rates and, you know, and cost of living.
It's
and
about
so
having, yeah,
it's about having more funding the system. That's what we're always talking about. But I think it can sometimes sound a bit confusing to people not involved in the sector, you know, hearing people, we want more funding for general practice, not general practitioners, just the sector. So that's interesting. The graphs and tables are really the most interesting parts of this report, with the narrative really describing the data that's presented. This is a really interesting table. So this looks at the average, this is asking GPs to self-report the average number of patients that they see each week, and then also ask them to think about how many hours a week you're typically working as well. And it's quite big ranges here.
We
divided the first number, how many do you see in a week, by how many hours you report that you work a week, just to give a patients per hour figure to work with, which is interesting to look at, really. So just going through, I mean, looking at the particularly high and lower numbers. So Australia, I'm seeing a lot of patients per hour compared to the others. Germany, 254 patients per week and working 53 hours per week with nearly five patients an hour worked. Not just, I guess the hours worked are not just patient-facing clinics, but worked on administrative, you know, tasks and time as well. That strikes me as really, really high and a significant outlier compared to the other data. I do wonder whether that data is fully comparable.
I think a couple of things to note. So when we talk about the time that people have spent at work, we know that obviously within the UK general practice, many clinicians are moving towards you know, working still full time. So let's be clear, 39 hours a week is considered pretty much full time, isn't it? But obviously that's the amount of time they're spending, despite the media and other parts reporting different kind of numbers and things. But also, it'd be interesting to know whether the question was particularly taken on the perspective of how many patients the clinicians see, as in face-to-face consultations, or whether it's patients that they have contact with, because that's a different type of number to take a representation of. And what we'll see later down the line, why that's relevant, is because of the different way that general practice has shifted in the UK compared to some of the other countries, and looks at managing the workload in comparison with the use of remote healthcare and that kind of stuff. So actually, if that number is meant to be, you know, we see 110 patients per week face to face, and doesn't incorporate the telephone and remote consultations actually work where maybe considerably higher. Do you want to know how to use System 1 more effectively as a clinician? There are various different things you can look at, but there is only one course that can help you understand this and have all my hints and tips on how to use System 1 so much more effectively, and that's the System 1 course for clinicians. If you want to have a look at it, have a look bit.ly/TPPS1course, TPP and S1 in capitals. But if you do have a look at it, what will you get? Well, you'll get content and information and guides on how to use System 1 more effectively, from getting started with System 1 to navigating the patient record, to understanding the key parts like doing a consultation, as well as prescribing, clinical admin, communication, and various other information. And this includes my hints and tips on how to use System 1 so much more effectively, so it saves you time and your patients stress in terms of their navigation with their patient journey. If you want to have a look at it, check out the link. As I said, it's bit.ly/TPPS1course, and the TPP and S1 are all in capitals, and you will get access to all this content perfectly. Even better yet, there's a money back guarantee. So if you don't actually find this course has helped save you some time, just let me know. I'll refund you the course once you've completed it and stuff. Catch you then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also, the number of hours worked per week is interesting as well, isn't it? Because I suspect your average UK GP working 39 hours a week is probably doing that over, you know, 3 or 3.5 days, you know, or maybe, you know, 3 days in clinic and then picking up a few hours on the other days, catching up on tasks. And, you know, I wonder if it's the same pattern in other countries. I don't know. You have to think about how comparable these are, but interesting. Interesting. And I guess UK, this number is the highest apart from Australia and Germany as well. So interesting.
I guess if we look at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the United States and Switzerland as the lowest. So United States, you know, I think on average, their first patient contact, they will have often about half an hour per patient. So the time that they spend obviously is more reflective in the fact that they spend more time with their patients in terms of the work that they do.
So, But interesting to dig into these reports behind the headlines, isn't it? I really enjoy this process that we go through, looking behind the headlines at the data. This one looks at reported routine appointment lengths. So it looks like we're doing a range of between 10 and 25 minute appointments. And UK and Germany have the shortest appointments in the rich world, by the look of this, at 10 minutes, with 15 sort of being, I guess, maybe the accepted normal, certainly. The median value here, and some places spending 20 minutes in the United States and 25 minutes in Sweden, which
amazing
is interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. Given I think Sweden, when we were looking at the number of GPs per head of population, actually had quite a low number as well, alongside the United States. So that's strange, isn't it? So it might imply something different about how their country's healthcare is structured.
But their satisfaction was quite high, though, wasn't it? Comparatively, there wasn't a shift in their satisfaction, if I remember rightly, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we almost need a comparison of how these systems work. I mean, I know that's something we've talked about trying to look into, or find a report to reflect on. So maybe we could do a follow-up contrasting the way these systems work in the future.
So next we talk about work-life balance. So GPs in the UK are more likely to be extremely or very satisfied with their work-life balance, was very low at 11%. Germany, similar, 8%, whereas Switzerland was 33%. Satisfaction in some senses with their work-life balance was better in other countries. Scotland, Wales, better than England. That looks good.
England separated out on its own is 9% compared with Germany's 8%. That's interesting to reflect on.
And then talk about pay. So you know, we mentioned this before in terms of how the pay factors into some of this, and actually that GPs in the UK comparatively seem to be more satisfied with their pay than the other countries. It doesn't actually mention hard numbers, so again, it's just a perception of what they feel satisfied with compared to, rather than the actual numbers. So it'd be really useful actually to have seen a comparison value, wouldn't it, Vandy, in terms of, you know, equivocal euros or, you know, dollars or something equivocal in terms of what the actual pay is for these different countries? Because I'm aware that in America they get paid considerably more money from as a family practitioner than we do in general practice in the UK.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And you think, wouldn't that be so useful to include in the study? I guess it's outside of the scope of this study, you know, and the methodology, but just pulling that information together would have made this study so much more interesting, I guess. But it's interesting already. So stress and burnout and emotional distress. So this was the one that hit the headlines, I think, essentially, because the UK, in response to the question, how stressful is your job? Doctors in the UK in 2022 are reporting the highest levels of stress, people responding with extremely stressful or very stressful, 71%, higher than Germany and Sweden, which appeared to be under quite a lot of pressure in some of those other graphs as well. Netherlands reporting the lowest levels of stress. So interesting. Yeah, so that made the headlines. I mean, we talk a lot about why GPs are feeling stressed, I guess. I often reflect on how much is purely the job and how much is the hostile environment in which we operate in terms of media and change pressure from the government, and that contributes to these perceptions of feelings, not just perceptions, but feelings of stress and burnout. So, but just in graph, let's keep going. Based on your definition of burnout, okay, so they're not providing them with a definition. So, you know, perceptions of what that means may be different across different countries that may have slightly different cultures or definitions of burnout. How would you rate your current level of burnout? So interesting that whilst GPs report, you know, GPs in the UK are reporting the highest levels of stress, not, we're up there in terms of reporting levels of burnout, but not reporting the same levels of burnout as other countries. So that's interesting. I don't know quite what's driving that. But illustrating things are tough around the world for general practice and for people working in healthcare. So it's quite refreshing, is not the right word, is it? But it's interesting to know that. So it's interesting. Let's have a look. What else have we looked at? Oh, future career plans. So they didn't provide a graph for this. So for this, we'll go to the Commonwealth report, because this is about the plans of GPs to leave the profession. So this is where we'll go out to the Commonwealth report here. And the conclusion they drew was, nearly half of older primary care physicians in most countries say they intend to stop seeing patients in the near future. So this is physicians who say they plan to stop seeing patients within the next 3 years. And it breaks out by age group as well. And in both the under 55s and the over 55s, the UK have the highest number of GPs with the intention to stop seeing patients over the next 3 years.
And I think that's the key thing, isn't it? When you combine those two aspects of stress and burnout being the highest for the UK, it's leading to more people wanting to leave the profession in the UK. And I think that's where a lot of the media attention came to this particular document, wasn't it, in terms of the impact that's going to have. And we'll see how that is reflected towards the tail end of this document as well.
Interesting here that those Germans who are saying, you know, nearly five patients an hour in their 57-hour week, much lower intention to leave the profession compared to UK. Significantly, that I wonder what's going on there. And you know, it would be nice to do some further inquiry around that, wouldn't it? Or if somebody were to do that, because despite seeming to work harder in terms of the statistics, at least, less likely to be intending to leave. Interesting. But let's go back to the foundation report. And keep going. The graphs are where the interest is really here. How would you say the overall quality of care you're currently able to provide to your patient has changed? So compared to before COVID pandemic, compared to after. And you know, red is worse, blue is improved, and I think everybody is saying they think and light red has stayed about the same. So many of the countries, actually, the overwhelming response is that they think it's stayed the same. Those countries where they think it's worsened are New Zealand, UK, Sweden, Germany, then moving into middle of the pack, France and Canada. So things have got worse over that,
generally speaking,
period of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. You wonder what drives these self-reported perceptions, because I know we feel under a lot of pressure around access, don't we?
Definitely.
In the UK.
And it, like you said, is it the media attention reminding us and focusing on that on a repeated basis that aggravates that kind of perspective?
And another question, how prepared is your practice with respect to having sufficient skills and experience to manage the patients you care for? So this is, do you and your team feel equipped to deal with these categories of care? And those are dementia, palliative care, substance use related issues, mental illness and chronic conditions. And actually the UK, for the most part, are reporting feeling that they or their teams are quite well prepared, mm-hmm. quite capable of delivering these sorts of care, and actually up there with the best in the rich world in terms of delivering care, which is good, isn't it? Substance misuse, all primary care physicians are reporting less confidence dealing with substance misuse issues in the UK, mm-hmm. sort of relegated to the middle of the pack there. But that might, often these things reflect how healthcare is structured within the country. True. That's providing the response. You know, for example, you know, Canada feeling less confident providing dementia care, that may well reflect that actually that care is provided by
that's actually America.
Is that America? United States. Yeah. Sorry, different shades of lilac there. So United States, but maybe that's actually more of a secondary care role in the United States. So we just have to bear that in mind when looking at it. With palliative care and substance use. So and it might give us a clue actually as to how those systems are structured. Much fewer mm-hmm. family doctors in the United States, but that may reflect the fact that a lot of aspects of care are more of that care is provided by secondary care. So interesting. So okay, mm-hmm. feeling equipped and prepared. This next one, figure eight, is about what types of out of hours access is being provided by, you know, people feel they are providing within each country. So patient can be seen in person and or on the telephone when the practice mm-hmm. is closed. So 76% in the UK. I mean, we do largely, there is out of hours provision. So in theory, there is a service there to see patients. Quite how good their access is and success at being seen is maybe up for debate, and why this figure isn't 100%, because I guess it should be in terms of a service actually being provided. Weekend appointments, at least once a month. So this is from 2022, isn't it? So this is probably before PCN extended hours and extended access was really coming into play. That was
possibly
too late in 2022. I
mean, it wasn't been a major shift, because a lot of networks were already providing the aspects of it, in regions were providing it anyway. It was obviously October when the networks were given responsibility to take control of that. So it may have changed since then. But similarly, not too bad. The UK seems to be doing quite well in terms of provision of out of hours care, despite, again, what the media says compared to other countries.
Yeah. And also it's the perception of what's available to the patient. So it says practice offers weekend appointments, and it might be that actually the weekend appointments are offered at another practice down the mm-hmm. road, you know, because you have your model of providing that extended access is actually that they're not, those appointments are available to your practice and your patients, but they are provided at a different physical location. So there may be some aspects of the question being interpreted in a different way by the UK respondents. I don't know, but it's interesting. And it's just interesting to have the comparative data, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And so the UK, much lower in terms of weekend appointments compared to evening offer and, you know, offer when the practice is closed. So, interesting. Telehealth. So this is an interesting one, isn't it? Because the UK looks significantly different to other countries here. In a typical week, about what percentage of your patient consultations are conducted in person by telephone at that point in time in 2022, which is now, you know, in the past, and things may have changed.
Mm-hmm.
Point. But the UK reporting less face-to-face and more phone and more video appointments compared to most of the countries. What do you think?
So it's interesting because it does mention in the document as well about the shift of the UK going towards a total triage model during COVID and how that was enforced and recommended at the time. And obviously then as a result of that, the benefits that remote care has allowed for both the practice teams, but also for patient cohorts as well. And whether that's the reason why it continues, there's been a shift of obviously some of the countries back towards face-to-face and more so obviously that we can see. It does also comment that the data capture side of it is obviously to be a limitation. So we mentioned that earlier, this is perception of how the people offer that care. It's not based on actual extracted data sets and that kind of stuff to understand that level of different options and stuff. So, you know, is that down to the particular types of workforce? And also remembering that this is a survey of GPs. This isn't a survey of primary care, which offers a different offer in terms of the capacity of face-to-face versus telephone care. Because actually, many practices have moved to a triage-based model, and those people doing the triage tends to be the most experienced people in the practice, which typically would maybe be the GPs. So they may be doing more of that telephone-based workload. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the practice is not offering face-to-face consultations.
Yeah, and things may have changed now, and it'd be interesting to compare it with GP Access dashboard data as well to see how accurate that self-reporting is. It's interesting because remote access is not always a bad thing. You know, if you follow the local media in the UK, you know the perception is it's a bad thing. If you talk to patients at your practice, you know, I find a significant proportion of them actually want an appointment by telephone because it's much more convenient for them, or by video, or they're not doing so many of those these days. And actually some of these countries at the higher end, they may feel that actually they should be doing more telehealth, and they may be having drives to actually increase that because maybe that's more what their population want, so where the right balance is, I think, is up for debate actually. We could be closer to the correct balance than some of these other countries providing more face-to-face, but I don't know. And I think there's a process of discovery in general practice around the world to find where that balance is, and it will be different for different people, different patient populations across the world. But that was an interesting graph just because of the difference in terms of where the UK sits compared to those other rich and developed countries. This is another question about the types of appointments available online, or what is available in terms of the online offer in countries. How do you think about the UK's positioning here, Gandhi?
It's generally well placed. Interesting that obviously with telehealth, we're significantly the highest country, but in terms of online access, we're often with the pack or towards the higher end, but not at the top. And I think that's something to take note of. That is that something we can focus a little bit more on? It's interesting. There's been some with the junior doctor strikes. There's been some rhetoric coming through from certain parts of the government about how technology is the thing that will help us have more efficiency. And actually, we don't need to pay the workforce more. We just need to invest more in technology to allow better access to results, all that kind of stuff. And then that would mean we need less doctors, so then we can pay them more or pay them less, actually. But it's interesting that you still need the people to operate the technology, which is the part that I think people forget. And whether this has some bearing in terms of how that may help or hinder, I think could be a really interesting discovery piece to do. But whether we've got the time to do it is the other question, I think, is now.
The question. I think we need to do another episode on AI and automation in the near future, Gandhi. There's things have changed a lot. It's interesting to look. It looks like some countries have kind of gone in for online access, and some countries haven't. So in all of these questions about viewing summaries, results, prescriptions, scheduling appointments, and virtual communication via secure channels, secure websites and apps, countries like the UK are doing well, up there, along with Netherlands, Sweden, performing well here. And then some countries are obviously not going in for this at the moment. The likes of your Canada's, your Switzerland's, your Germany's are the ones where this sort of stuff is really less than 50% availability. So I think actually, UK doing well.
And that may reflect why also they're doing more. Yeah, and I think that may also reflect why those countries are actually doing more face-to-face consultations, because they have less availability and access use of these other routes, So that's why they're doing more face-to-face.
It's interesting, isn't it? So that was figure 10, which I think was the last figure, but there was just some questions about we'd highlighted some comments about use of data, and then some reflections really along their headings. So I think you were saying about UK using data well comes through here. So I think they've asked GPs about how they engage with patient data. So GPs in the UK, very high proportion, 91%, saying they look regularly at prescribing data. You know, we have our pharmacy visits every year. You know, that's been a stable and long-standing aspect of practicing general practice in the UK. So that happens. So it's interesting that doesn't happen. A comparison table might have been quite useful here to demonstrate how general practice in the UK performs well compared to other countries. Patient satisfaction surveys, actually really high, 82%. There is a contractual requirement to do that in the UK. And Sweden does quite well, 78%, Netherlands 92%, but other countries not doing so well in those aspects. So they were just commending the UK for being ahead of most countries by a large margin in terms of using data to inform care. That's good. Well done, UK general practice. And actually policy, you know, at NHS that drive those behaviours as well. Data has been made a priority, and it's good that that's coming through in international results.
So the third section then talks about communication with other services. So particularly it focuses on two different key areas, but the first one being secondary care. It's an interesting one here in terms of some of the aspects. So in some ways, the UK seems to be doing relatively well, but there's two areas where it's doing really, really badly in. Yep. And that's discharge information in terms of getting that information within 48 hours from the hospital teams, and also GPs receiving a report with the results of the specialist within 1 week of service. So we are the worst in that aspect and stuff. And I think that does probably reflect a lot of the experience many clinicians have in terms of timeliness of discharge information in those situations.
And patients, you know, oh, doctor, I went to see my specialist 3 weeks ago. I think they were writing you a letter, you know, about how we're going to advance my care. Have you got the letter yet? It's too often the answer is no. We'll waste some resources getting my secretary to try and telephone their secretary and try and get hold of that, you know, information. So it's quite wasteful. But this is really those aspects where information is coming out of secondary care and into primary care, which reflects how secondary care is operating as well. And how the two things are connected. And then they talk about engagement with social care. So this is about actually inquiries about routine inquiries about social care needs and whether those routinely or regularly happen. It's interesting, UK middle of the pack in terms of how we inquire about social isolation or loneliness, actually probably ahead of the pack in that respect, just behind the Netherlands, which seems to be a good performer in most aspects here, and equal with the Netherlands in terms of attention to domestic violence, which is good. At the lower end, talking about transportation needs, that might be actually an aspect of how hospital transport and transport to appointments is structured, because there's a separate way that that patients can get assistance with transport, which is outside of general practice. So that's interesting. We could probably do more around food insecurity and financial security. Up there, housing, the UK is top in terms of discussions or screening questions around housing, which I think is good. It's useful to know what your patient's housing situation is. So we're nearly at the end. Just a few more graphs, but it's been interesting to go through them. What challenges do you have when engaging with social care? So this is just UK data, and for most aspects of communication with social care, people are highlighting major or minor challenges. And with the main, let's just take sort of the most problematic area is lack of follow-up about which services patients received or need. So I guess that's when we make a referral into social care. It's about getting some information back. People are feeling that that's an area where communication is lacking. And then I guess the better performing area is people are less reporting a lack of, so actually more of a presence of a referral system or mechanism to make referrals into social care. So it's interesting. I guess the mechanism are there is just how well they perform when you try and use them. Anything you want to say about this graph before we move on, Gandhi?
No, it's fairly self-explanatory, isn't it, Andy? So it just gives us information about the aspects and perspective.
Yeah. So discussion and conclusions. So I guess we can talk around the main headings that they've come up with here. We're probably not going to disagree with anything. So they identify that high GP stress and workload are a major threat to the future of the NHS. We talk about that regularly. I don't know whether policymakers behave like they think that that's the case.
I don't think they care, to be honest, but that's my individual perspective. You know, they see us as just the workhorses to keep doing the work and crack on whilst they hit the whip, really.
Goodness me, that's very bleak, Gandhi.
Maybe it's the fasting head, you know, kicking in, and the lack of caffeine and everything else and tiredness and stuff. But, you know, we're coming off the second strike from the junior doctors. Obviously, they've just announced there's potentially going to be more strikes from the nurses, and the rhetoric from the government in terms of some of the media pushes they've been putting out is very much more, well, we're going to hit you harder. We're going to make sure that, you know, people think less of you rather than actually come to the table and talk about discussions. And that's, I think, a tone many in the profession are feeling right now, that actually the government's not there to support the healthcare service. It's there to just basically do its best to make us feel worse about it and just stop us complaining.
I would say, I think the focus is on access, is on performance of the healthcare system, and there isn't a focus on staff well-being. I mean, if you talk to people in the business community, and if you think about how you run, you know, your practice, actually, you would probably say, you know, the most valuable access that enables us to do anything effectively is the workforce. You know, and if we alienate our workforce within the practice, or if a business does not have a satisfied workforce, then that business really struggles to deliver its objectives. So maybe actually there would be some wisdom in focusing a bit more on these aspects, but it feels like the great eye is focused on other areas and not
loving the Lord of the Rings reference there, Andy.
Yeah, the eye of Sauron. Another area that they draw conclusions about is GPs are concerned about the quality of care, but lead the way in some areas. So I think we saw that in the graphs, didn't we, actually? Yeah. Actually, in terms of use of data, in terms of online services, in terms of providing a comprehensive package of care, in terms of the capability to look after people with dementia, palliative care, and all those aspects of care through life, actually, GPs in the UK perform well compared to other countries. But GPs in the UK are concerned about their workload, and they're concerned about the quality of care. And that concern is increasing, I guess, is a conclusion. I guess we wouldn't argue with that, would we?
No.
It's just useful to have a report with some statistics to help shine a light on these areas. And that international comparison is really, really useful and really, really interesting. The UK appears to use more remote consultations, but what this means is unclear. I think that's what we were talking about, actually, wasn't it? You know, the current perception within our media is that people would like more face-to-face appointments than are currently being provided. We wonder whether that's whether that actually is borne out in our own experience. And I guess we wonder where actually the right place is, and actually maybe some other countries should be providing more remote consultations. Mm-hmm. So that's... We draw the same conclusions as the Health Foundation, and worrying signs about social care and wider services in the community. So I guess these are amongst those last graphs where we saw some problems with communications from hospital. On a field of generally good communications, there were some areas in terms of timely communication out of hospitals to general practice where there was a problem and a worry from UK general practitioners, and so similar concern about receiving information to coordinate care with social care. And I'm going to leave you with the last paragraph, Gandhi. Did you feel it was important that we just reflect on this last
paragraph? I mean, it's quite pivotal in terms of what it mentions. So it talks about how GPs finding it harder in terms of working in the services, and that, you know, they face deep cuts and other kind of changes, but more importantly, more than anything else, that actually the system organizers, basically the government ministers, need to take a focus on the fact that, you know, they are seeing high levels of burnout, high levels of people wanting to leave the profession. And actually, if they don't start turning this around, then there's going to be even more deepening issues with the workforce. And then that obviously has an impact in terms of the level of care people leave. And, you know, many people are worried about when we get to this tipping point of, you know, you get to a point where so many people are leaving that actually the people left have so much left to burden with that then it just crashes, and, you know, it's going to crash hard. And I think that's the worry. And absolutely, that's what's led to many of the within the profession going on strike. And obviously, that, like I mentioned earlier, that's something that is continuing to evolve as, you know, time progresses and things. But it's just that there's some changes that need to be made, and, you know, this really does have an impact in it, and more so in terms of the deprived areas. That's the, one of the last sentences it says. You know, health inequalities is having a huge impact on this, and actually it's deepening the problems rather than helping them.
Absolutely, yeah. A call for support with the other wider determinants of health outside of the healthcare that people receive, which accounts for 80% of their outcomes, as we're aware. And the Health Foundation have lots of other reports and good statistics around health inequality. So it's nice to see health inequality is acknowledged at the end of this report. So that's that. So that's the report behind the headline about GPs in the UK experiencing more burnout and more stress than comparators in other countries. And there's some other interesting conclusions in there. I took away from that general practice is under pressure everywhere. And also actually that UK general practice is performing well in some aspects of care, particularly data and online, and the comprehensiveness of the package of care that's provided by UK general practice. So some positives to take out in terms of our performance relative to other rich countries' health services. Any take-homes from you, Gandhi?
I think, like I said, it's just that perspective of we know the profession is really struggling. It's getting to that point where I think that tipping point is going to get closer and closer to the fray. And I don't know how it's going to change. That's really part of the challenge, because we're heading towards this system whereby it just feels like it's getting so much worse. But how much more worse can it get is the other part. So I don't know. I think I would love to see some sort of response from the government to this report, because actually then an acknowledgement that there are challenges, whether we will get that or not, God knows. But I think, you know, having an understanding that this needs to feed into some of the other stuff that's happening, and, you know, we are anticipating a new GP contract, we are anticipating, you know, ICB level changes and stuff. Maybe the ICBs need to be looking at this particular information as well, and factoring that into what they are doing moving forward for the next year or so. Because things need to change, otherwise we're just going to crash and burn, aren't we, Andy, to be honest?
I think so. I think there's a message here to value your workforce. Those are the people who really, yeah, that deter, you know, how motivated and how secure and comfortable your workforce is. You know, any business owner knows that that's a big part of how successful you are as an organization in delivering your objectives. So I think the government, you know, needs to heed that. I do wonder, we've just been reviewing the Hewitt report, you know, we'll probably link to that somewhere, but there's definitely a shift of power down to ICBs, whether ICBs will be in a position to empower and value their workforce and listen to their workforce better. I don't know. So maybe there's a potential indication of some possible silver lining there.
I think there's some definite strength for the ICBs to help. I think there's some definite strength for the ICBs to help sort out things like the communications with secondary care and social care and that kind of stuff. That's the whole point of integrated care systems, isn't it? To improve those connections and that transfer. So that may help with some aspects of those. I guess that's probably something we're going to be talking about in our PCM Plus special that we're going to be having with Ben and Tara. So if people do want to jump in and join us, that's on the 29th of April. It's a live session that's going to be on YouTube. And if you want to have a look at the link for that and register for it, then do check out this link up here. If the episode's already happened, you'll be able to watch it from there. Alternatively, if you do want to know a bit more about the whole wellbeing stuff in general practice, do check out the QoF QI stuff that talks about wellbeing. And that's probably coming up right here for you as well. And as always, we're going to be here to help tech enhance your primary care and learning. And we'll catch you in the next episode.
Oh, hello there, GP Learner. I'm Dr. Gandalf, and I often get asked, what kind of resources do you have to try and help those using EMIS? Because you tend to do a lot more stuff for System 1. And often I've really struggled to answer that question because, let's be honest, I don't use EMIS on a regular basis. So therefore, trying to help EMIS users is a little bit more difficult for myself. And that really made me feel, well, not great. So I kind of did something to try and help all those EMIS users out there. I went and had a chat with one of my colleagues, Dr. Mike from GP on the Move, and him and I have created a course that you can use to help you use EMIS so much better. That's right. If you use EMIS, but you want to use it so much better, so much quicker, and in such a way that means you go home sooner, then check out our EMIS for Clinicians course. It's an online course that takes you through all the tips and tricks that Dr. Mike knows to try and basically mean you can go home quicker. That'd be a cool thing, wouldn't it? And guess what? It's currently on offer. So if you want to take advantage of this introductory offer and get access to it now, look at the links down below and check it out. Additionally, if you're a practice, network, or wide area that wants more opportunity to use it, send me an email, egplearning@gmail.com. Let's see if we can help you out. And as I like to say, tech enhance your primary care and learning. Shall we get back to it? Oh, and if you wanted one for System 1 users, well, you know I've got you covered, haven't I? Check out the Learn System 1 for Clinicians course, bit.ly/TPP S1 course.